This is the Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein on AM 790. Learn how you can maximize customer value
while minimizing waste.
And now the leader of Lean Nation,
Captain Carl,
at your station for talk and business,
AM 790.
Hey, and welcome to Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talk and business. And what a whirlwind of a day it's been today. I'll tell you what, with Obama coming to Rhode Island yesterday, with EDC board meetings, and then this morning, big bright yellow bus pulls up out in front of the factory, and it's the Harvard team. Harvard team's back again, which is great. They're always a lot of fun here. They were here on a Learning to See tour. They spent most of the morning with us here and our team here, touring the facility, the back office, the factory, the machine shop, and going around and listening to the experiences, listening to what our operational excellence system is here, listening to our continuous improvement, listening to the people, and just trying to vet out for themselves, how does this all apply to higher education? How does it apply to us? How does it apply to us as a group? And how do we get in front of the pack? Because everybody is looking at customer experience. And they're thinking that they've had, you know, a long-standing tradition of academia, of a certain service level, of certain expectations, and that maybe they're a little bit different than just the manufacturer. But you know what? We all have processes. No matter who the heck we are, what we're doing, we all have processes. And you start boiling that down, and we all have customers. You know, we all have customers that we're trying to please our customers, meet, beat, exceed customer expectations. So, you know, as they walked through the facility, their minds started opening up on how all this applies, how they can creatively work together and do things like that. And yesterday with Obama's visit here, you know, as elections come up really close here, I think it's next Tuesday, November 2nd, right? Very short period of time away. And, you know, the neat thing was that Obama went to a local Rhode Island company up in Woonsocket, American Cord and Webbing. And they'd come to visit us on a Learning to See tour, believe it or not, about 12 months, 14 months ago. And really, you know, they've been trying to do lean, trying to think about their processes, trying to think about their material and information flow. They had two campuses where they were manufacturing, and they do webbing for knapsacks of military work as well as, you know, the private sector, the public sector and private sector. And I went up and visited their facility, and they gave us some really neat ideas that we've been sitting on our duffs here. We need to get off the stick. And, you know, they have some great things for us to incorporate into our products. And it was kind of neat to hear that hopefully a little bit of what they took away and what the president saw there yesterday were some little DNA markers, strings, you know, DNA strings from the Vibration Nation, from our company. So, you know, I give them a big shout out if you're listening. And you know, the president and the political leaders that all showed up there need to do more gemba walks like that and really listen. You know, really listen. This was driven by politics and everything else, so you wonder how much they listen out there. But you know what? There's some great stories to be told, and there's some great philosophies to learn. Just like the Harvard crew here this morning. Today we have with us in studio here at the Vibration Nation, David Pano. David's been on Lean Nation before. He's with BMA, Brian Maskell and Associates, Inc., and it's www.maskell.com, and they're Lean Accounting guys. And Brian came in, or Brian, geez, sorry, David, geez, Brian's his boss.
Brian was here, too, though. That
was Brian was here. Brian's been here, too. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for correcting me. But, you know, David came in as we were doing the debrief. And welcome to the Lean Nation, yeah, first off.
Thank you. It's great to be here and actually be here this time and not on the phone. And
you know, this is your first visit, but what the heck did you think about that? Here you come walking in, there's 45 people, and we're going around the table of just impressions, input, questions. Have you ever been exposed to anything like that before?
Yeah, this was great stuff. Well, it was a great time for me to walk in, too, because they were – just giving all these comments. And you could just see the look on people's faces when they really saw it in action. You know, learning to see, right? You really get it when you see it. You know, kind of talking about these theories sometimes is not good enough. Most people aren't going to really capture and see what's happening, especially the cultural aspect of the changes of lean, until they see it and feel it and understand what's going on from a continuous improvement standpoint. And from, yeah, I heard a couple of people just make the comment about, wow, what a change you've made over the course of all this time and over your lean journey. And just one comment and after another, I think that just reinforced your focus here, your commitment to the lean strategies, because everything that they said, from the people aspect to the problem solving, getting everybody in the organization centered around continuous improvement, empowering our people, and pursuing that perfection, you could just see in their questions and comments on each of those topics, I think, was right on. And yeah, it was probably had to be flattering for you to hear, as well as you know these things already, how well you guys are doing. But I think most importantly, when you're able to show people who don't have a full understanding of what this all really means, especially Harvard people, right? And, you know, a lot of these things don't get translated too easily from academia out to the business world, and sometimes there's a language barrier. But I think to see it for real, like they were able to do today, was really beneficial for a lot of those people. All of them had nothing but positive comments.
Yeah, and I have to commend them, you know, because, you know, just the Harvard stature, you know, has a certain amount of cachet to it and a certain amount of, you know, high-hattedness. You know, and not in a bad sense. I'm not saying in a bad sense, but, you know, just being the best of the best. But they were here really, David, to make sure that going forward, they stay the best of the best. What are the people doing best and brightest? What are people looking at for customers? And they know that there's a lot more competition out there, and they want to sharpen their game, man. You gotta hand it to them. It takes a lot of courage for them to come down and do that and really learn. They were charged up.
Yeah, because it's easy. You would think it's easy for big companies to do this, but it would be very easy for a school like Harvard to kind of.
Well, Harvard goes around and writes case studies about all the things that you do at BMA, you know, and they sent Harvard professor after professor to Toyota down in Kentucky and studied it. And they have Bentall Shahar happier. They have all these great thought leaders. And are they really working and maximizing on what they have with inside their four walls to practice what they preach and what they're going out and showing and exposing for others to read and practice and do? You know, they have it right there.
Exactly. And to make those changes quickly so they can give the students there, the people they're studying there, actual real examples of what's happening out there and the kind of improvements, and not just looking back at, oh, this is the traditional way we do things. Even in my line with accounting, you know, kind of redefining how we look at accounting even in organizations. This is hard for people to grasp, especially in academia, to say that there'd be a different way of doing it after all this time of using those tools for so many years.
Yeah, you guys are breaking, I don't want to say rules, but you're breaking a lot of preconceptions and a lot of history that we do it this way. You're not breaking general accounting principles, but you're breaking the way you look at things. And how do you look at those things to really support what's going on factory floors across the U.S. or what's going on in organizations where they're processing people and paperwork and things, and everybody has a value stream.
Exactly. Whether it's a piece of paperwork that they're processing or a service that they're providing or a product that they're delivering. I'm working with a hospital right now, so we're looking at the flow of patients, you know, not necessarily the flow of products like we would normally look at in a manufacturing operation, but everybody has a flow, a value stream, and everyone has obstacles to the flow, and understanding how those obstacles really are what drive the costs and the value stream are key. You know, how quickly can we flow those products through the value stream? And our job as lean leaders is to really remove those obstacles, help people to remove those obstacles. I heard you mentioning that with the Harvard team today. You know, it's like, as leaders, how do we go out and remove the things that are getting in people's way to create flow for the customer and at the demand that the customer wants?
That's such a critical point, because, you know, this was a group of leaders here. You know, I asked at the beginning of the tour how many people were leaders, and the role changes about what they do as leaders and how they support their team as leaders. And I told you yesterday, I'm not going to mention companies and people, but I was out speaking at a company yesterday about lean and just introducing them. And they, you know, people have always heard the words lean Kaizen, and Ritsuo Shingo doesn't know what lean is. He said he proposed that lean, I don't know what lean is. Kaizen, I know Kaizen. But continuous improvement, we'll just call it that, because everybody wants to be a critic with the words. But people just trying to do better and continually improve. And I was talking to an executive team at a company, and I kind of threw it out there. How many of you guys and gals are willing to tell people when you have a problem, when things aren't right?
Mm.
No one wanted to raise their hand.
Yeah, that was.
They were all nervous.
That was an observation today by one of the team members. They said, you know, just the fact that people weren't afraid. There's no fear, and you know, you have to create that kind of environment in a lean culture. There cannot be fear of problems. We have to look at the problems as opportunities. We can't beat people over the head when we raise. We want the problems to be raised to so we can see them. That's why we do visual controls, so we can really clearly see when there are things that are out of whack, and we can't. We can't bang people for that.
We have to
celebrate the fact that we have an opportunity there.
You'll lose out on that big opportunity. And now we have an opportunity. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We're going to take a quick break from our sponsors. I'll be right back after this message. Hey, and welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790. If you're just tuning in, we have David Pano with us. He's with BMA Inc., and that's WW Maskell & Associates, and he is a lean accounting guy working for a lean accounting firm. And everybody's saying, well, what the heck is lean accounting? Well, you know what? David came down today to help us work on a project that we're working on for another company. We're not going to get into the company, Dave, but we're trying to explain what a traditional company looks like and what a lean company looks like. So maybe you want to talk about, you know, what lean accounting's, just a quick elevator speech about lean accounting, because you're really breaking the mold and looking at businesses differently.
Yes. Well, you know, with lean accounting, really, we look at
And you're not teaching new general accounting principles.
No, not at all.
You're just teaching another way of being analytical and get some metrics that are real time, daily, whatever, a lot more real time than month end close, quarter end, or year end close, and then saying, what the hell just happened?
Exactly. And lean accounting is primarily about, you know, giving simple financial information that everyone can understand and giving it, frequently, timely and accurate and actionable information. And really, it's important if you're going to adopt lean as a strategy for your business, then you have to begin to manage the business differently than a traditional company. And it really starts with where we even make the assumption of how profit is earned. Traditional companies, you know, look at profitability as, coming from the full utilization of resources. That's a very traditional approach for companies. Let's fully utilize our resources, where lean is.
So if anybody out there in Lean Nation is listening to this, this is where you spend $1 million on a piece of equipment. That piece of equipment better run every doggone minute of the day, shift, hour, week, month, or else we're not making money.
That's right.
That's wrong. It's right. I'm right. But that's the wrong assumption that people make. They make a lot of assumptions because they don't gather facts. You're helping take all these numbers and all these things that you have to do for general accounting principles, and then people make assumptions off of that, but they don't go out and gather the facts, and they don't look at the whole doggone picture.
That's right. And you know, a big foundation of all that and decision making for a lot of companies is standard cost, and that's where a lot of these decisions are being driven from. So while traditional would be focused on maximizing or utilizing these resources to the max, with lean we're looking at maximizing the flow at the pull of the customer. So we're focused around that flow issue. And if we just think about traditional, if we look at the comparison, traditionally, if a profit assumption for a traditional company comes from full utilization of resources. That's what they're going to measure. They're going to measure things like labor efficiency. They're going to measure machine utilization. They're going to look at overhead absorption. They're going to look at their standard costs. These are the things that they're going to use to measure the business.
Yep.
What kind of behaviors do those measurements drive? So, first of all, they're going to create behaviors of creating favorable variances. I remember when I was working with one of my plant managers at a company I used to work at, and we didn't really understand those variances too much, but we could understand how to make them look better, and we could build inventory in the last couple weeks of the month and make our numbers look much better. So the kind of behaviors that those measures drive, like creating those favorable variances, will result in maximizing this overhead absorption and lowering these individual standard costs, which results in inventory.
Yep.
Which results in long lead times,
yep.
Poor quality, poor delivery, expediting orders, complex and confusing measurement and control systems for the business as well. Because what I mean by that is, I remember I used to have a guy who worked for me, and his full-time job was basically chief expediter. Go find this stuff in the flow, because you had so much work in process. You had days of inventory on the shop floor and work in process, and to find something, it was hard to find something. So you needed a person to go out and get it and expedite it to the front of the line and all these other kind of things when you're building in batch. With Lean, when we went from having 15 days worth of materials in the flow down to about 2.5 hours, it wasn't too hard to find something. But these are the kind of results that you get when you measure and measure those kind of things that I mentioned, and make the profit assumption that utilization of resources, the full utilization of those resources, results in profit.
Well, everybody's getting incomplete information that is based off of old principles and dollars, and they're not looking at really what's happening in the factory and why certain things, behaviors get driven, and why these are impeding customers. Harvard was here to think about their customers, students, graduate students, and the research work and some of the other things that Harvard's known for.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't here to drive down costs. They weren't here to do all those things, because first you have to get the thought process, what do I want to do if you're going on this lean journey or continuous improvement or Kaizen, whatever you want to call it? And what kind of behaviors don't we want to have? And what kind of culture do we want to create? And what do we need to help teach or reteach everybody so we can foster and sustain these kind of new habits?
Exactly. You can't continue to manage in a traditional way if you're trying to drive lean behavior.
No.
It just can't happen. So that's lean accounting is really a collection of the tools that make up a lean management system. How do we manage in a lean environment? How do we manage to create that kind of culture to drive the right kind of behavior, a behavior that's focused? When I was going through the traditional, I started with the profit assumption. I'll go exactly backwards for a lean organization.
Go ahead, yeah.
And start with the results that we want, which is what you were just talking about. We want superior customer value. We're focused completely around what's good for the customer and creating more of that customer value.
Mm-hmm.
We're focused on quality, delivery, and lead time, and organizational productivity. And we want all of that to align to the business strategy.
But a lot of people say that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lip service. Just like now we're in the heat of, coming up on the elections, November 2nd, and you hear this rhetoric, and we as lean leaders being out on the front floors, you being, a worldly kind of guy, been around a lot of places, and you listen to these politicians talk about this stuff, and I'm like thinking to myself, does he or she have a doggone clue in heck how you make this happen? Because what they're touting out here, there's only a small percentage of people, companies, initiatives in the world that are really doing this stuff, and they're doing it with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and hard work, and people passionate about making this happen. I don't think they have a clue in heck.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get that sense?
Yes. I'd have to agree with you on that.
So, how do we get... you know, results, customer value in that, because the lean organizations really, really believe this. And anybody tuning into Lean Nation today, lean listeners that are zealots about this understand what we're talking about. But if you're just starting on this journey, this is real deal stuff. If you don't even know what this is, this is real deal stuff. This is not lip service. People live, die, breathe, wake up to do this every single day that they come to work.
Yeah, and actually that was noted today in the group that was here from Harvard. They were just, you know, about that whole culture aspect of it, and you know, exactly what you were saying is that it actually, people don't just apply this at work. This goes back to their home life. You know, when you adopt lean and when you become a believer in lean, it really changes your life overall, doesn't it? I mean, you look at everything different. You have a totally different perspective. And I know it sounds like lip service when we talk about focusing on the customer value. And even for a lot of lean companies, it's still lip service. Or companies that say they're doing lean. Let's put it that way. They're not lean yet if they're not doing that. But if they say they're doing some lean things, they're still not really focused on customer value sometimes, and they don't understand even what the customer really wants. And that's like kind of a maturity path for companies going through their lean transformation, is how do we really understand who the customer is, what they want, how do we get more of that voice of the customer. But you're right, this is a life-changing thing. It's hard, right? You got it. Lean is sometimes very simple, but it's not easy to go do.
No. And maybe with this project we're working on, maybe we can really talk about that, that people in a traditional company think that they're customer focused, think that they're giving customer value, but they don't set up the metrics, to measure that. They don't set up the behaviors in a system to really measure that, because they're working off the traditional systems of standard cost accounting, of, you know, inventories, of long lead times, of, you know, this time continuum that just stretches out, where they look at, you know, time as just a commodity that they can throw away. Time, a lean organization doesn't do that. Time is not a commodity, it's a scarcity. And how do I maximize time?
And that's why we get, you know, you mentioned about the kind of behaviors, and when you think about inventory even, and how much dollars that ties up, and the amount of time it takes you to, from order to delivery to the customer, when you have these huge batches and you're only running, you know, a part number once every 3 months or something like that. You know, you just can't do those kind of things if you're really trying to be lean. You have to break down those kind of systems.
You know, think about in our country, and we're going to talk about that when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We'll be right back with David Pano with BMA Inc., and we'll see you in just a moment.
Maximize customer value
and minimize waste.
The Lean Nation
on AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790. Hopefully you've been with us here for a while. We have David Pano with us with BMA Inc., Brian Maskell and Associates. And he is a lean accounting guy. It's his second stint here on the Lean Nation. And we're talking about traditional companies versus lean companies, on the way that they look at their accounting, the way that they look at their processes. And before we left for break, we were talking about just inventories. And while we were at break, I was talking to David saying, look at gross domestic product, you know, the GDP of what we have here in the U.S. and the swings that we've had from people having big inventories and the tightness of cash. And you had something anecdotal, an observation. You travel the country and see a lot of companies.
Yeah.
Let's hear your observation about this.
Yeah, I remember when the recession first hit, and there was a lot of companies out there that were worried about, you know, being able to tap into a line of credit for even reaching their weekly or monthly payrolls. But then you go into these companies and they've got millions of dollars on the books in inventory. And that to me is just very frustrating, because even in our traditional accounting systems, we count this inventory like it's cash in the bank. Think about those variances we were talking about. Labor variances. What am I going to do? I'm going to build more product and stuff it onto the shelf at the end of the month. and then that somehow is counted like I sold it. You know, in fact, when we reduce our inventory, you know, the P&L, the income statement, actually it has a negative impact on the income statement when we reduce inventories.
Yep.
So we have to be conscious of that when we're doing things lean, because we want the inventory to go down, so we know that that's going to happen, and we don't want to count built inventory to get the lowest unit cost as money in the bank, because it's not. We know that a lot of this.
Well, what happened was that the consumers at the beginning of this recession, I don't know if we still are in recession, out of recession, wherever we are, but they were putting it into the bank as made dollars that they could collect on later on, sometime in the future. And lean companies are thinking about collecting dollars now, this minute,
yeah,
this second,
exactly,
not in the future, not sometime. And all the customers dried up, and everybody's got all this finished inventory. That's the worst. It's one thing if you have it a few stages removed in your value stream, that you, at least you have it in raw before adding a lot of ton of dollars to this.
Sure.
If you're going to have an imbalance of inventory, have it in like the most simple, simple damn form, so
yes,
you can put the brakes on and, you know, just release this as customers want it. And then all of a sudden customers change, buying patterns change, competition comes along, and you might have, and this big companies that have tens of millions of dollars worth of stuff that's worth nothing.
Yeah, I've been at companies where they know that it's bad, but they don't want to write it off yet. They got to figure out, you know, the timing of this, you know. I've run into a lot of those kind of things, but
the thing is to have the awareness, David, that, yep, we have all this stuff, because even us as a small company, we had stuff like that. We say, oh, we'll use it at some time. When's the best time to write it off? We don't want to get rid of it. We might use it. And you play all these stupid scenarios in your head. But the awareness is to say to yourself, you know what? We're only buying what we need at the rate that the customer wants.
Right. Build it to the customer demand.
Build it to the customer demand, the pull. And then you don't have to run through these stupid scenarios. You don't have to waste valuable, you know, space on your floor, in your warehouses, build new warehouses, do all this stuff. Those scenarios never come up.
Right, exactly. And then you've got the cash flow. Yeah, I mean, I work for a company where we freed up so much cash flow by reducing the inventory that allowed us to invest in growth opportunities that we would have never been able to invest in if we would have kept that water level of the inventory of the business at, you know, $100 million. We would have never been able to do that. Cutting it down, you know, cutting that by 80%, then you're talking about a lot of cash. And that's
nimble.
What
you add nimbleness to the company.
Exactly.
And you know, everybody starts getting, you know, they start having a fiduciary responsibility, you know, and as you explain the reasons to everybody for doing this stuff, it gets easier and easier to develop a culture that just doesn't want to consume for the sake of consuming or have product there. Well, you know, I remember when we ran out before. Well, you know what? Talk to your vendors, talk to your people, and make sure that you don't run out and have contingency plans that doesn't happen.
Yeah, with lean, you know, inventory are really just problems that we haven't solved yet that we use very strategically to meet customer demand in the amount of time that our processes can at that point. But, you know, we want to reduce it and get it down, and we don't want to build product to some kind of schedule or just throwing stuff on the shelf, acting like that makes us more productive, because it really doesn't.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to Dave as well that we have a competitive situation. We had a product we went out to bid with the customer and printed out a standard bill of material, standard costing, looked at it, and I hate doing that because we haven't made the full switch yet to value stream accounting. We're still really learning this because we want to get it right. And gave him a good price, thought 99.9% we're going to get an order, get an email today. Well, it was 20. They decided to shop it, and they found it for $20 less. And now I'm looking at this costed bill of materials saying, you know what, this is the wrong way to cost this out, because we build these in a value stream. What does it really cost me in that value stream? And then you had some scenarios. What are the other things I should be asking myself?
Because if you have the capacity, I mean, first of all, do we have the capability of making it? You know, for
we have that. Yeah. So we'll go through the checklist here. You asked me.
I got the capability.
We
yes.
have the capability. We
now,
can make it.
Do you have the capacity to do it?
I think, and I'm gonna say I think, and that's a bad one, but I'm 99% that we have the capacity to do it.
And that's where we want to know that. So we know that by understanding the data from the value stream. We say, what can we actually do here? What is the capacity of the value stream? And if we have the capacity, then the cost of the products that you're talking about, you could really say is just the cost of the material. Because if nothing, if you don't have to add any other resources for that, and the only thing that's going to change is going to be the material cost, then that's all that's really costing you. So
how about now, overhead and paint, the packaging. So I'm going to look at just the things that I have to take cash out of our pockets here and give cash to somebody else, a transactional thing that I can't change without really sharpening it.
Exactly. So you look at it as just like you would your checkbook running your home, Very simple. Is this something that is it going to cost us more money? This is why the standard costs are just wrong and lead to bad decisions. Now, we're not saying that, you should use this to lower your prices. We're not saying that. Actually, once you get the highest price you possibly can
of course,
creating the most value. But, what we want to be able to do is say, what's best for the profitability of the value stream? So what does it do to the profitability? Is it going to make it better or worse? And that's going to drive our decision right there. So if we have the capacity, we don't want to factor in a standard cost because that won't tell us anything. We're not going to have to add any labor. We're only going to have to add, even if you did have to add labor, you want to do it with the incremental changes to the value stream and not just based upon a standard
cost. Well, see,
cost.
Here we flex people in and out of the cells. And I don't think you were here during the debrief. That cell may sit idle for a couple of days because we have no demand.
Sure.
So we're only bringing labor in there quickly to produce what the customer pull is. So in the lifespan of what goes on here during the day, it's nanoseconds
exactly.
If you think about it.
Yep.
And so let me just run a scenario. So I think, the sell price was like $100 to this customer. And the costed bill of material with overhead and some other stuff was like at $72. And I think hard costs were somewhere in around the $37, $38 area. So I should be looking at the $37, $38 area and saying to myself, that's what our hard cost is. Now what the heck do I do? What's my thought process?
Yeah, you're gonna look at what's gonna be best for the value stream as far as the profitability.
Okay, explain that one too, because I'm a little bit slow here. I'm trying to figure that out.
When we're talking about the value stream here, we're looking really consider it like a small business unit.
Almost
like a very entrepreneurial feel is what we're trying to get. So identifying your value streams within the business. So the way you deliver that value to the customer, where are your value streams? And then we're looking at the cost by those value streams as a whole. All of the costs, and this doesn't include just the operations. This is from order entry all the way through to delivering the product. As we're saying, what's involved in that value stream? What are all the costs?
Okay, so I can't just look then at the cost of just the raw materials at $36, $37, because we do have order entry. We do have some packaging. We have some movement of material and things like this. So how the heck do I get that all in there? Is that a certain percentage that you look at in that value stream?
No, when I say do we have the capacity,
okay,
we look at the capacity of the entire flow. So if you took on enough significant business, you may have capacity constraints in order entry. Yeah, some companies do.
Right.
But when we say you have the capacity, that means if you look at all of the costs within the value stream to deliver these products, that there's nothing that's going to change. We have all of the resources. We have the available capacity.
So we have people working on the work already. We don't have to add incremental people to work on the work. That it's just going to be part of their normal tasks, and it's going to go through with the same velocity and same speed that everything else happens here.
Right. And then if the only thing that's going to change is you just make that material, you put the material cost in there and you say that's going to be the difference. And then you recalculate the profitability. So think of it as a gross profit for the value stream. Just think it, for your business.
Yeah, so that's what we want to do is get some kind of percentage for the gross profit as things travel down these value streams here.
Yes.
That's my missing link to this whole thing.
Right, and we want to drive that rate of flow because the cost of the products is actually the rate at which we can flow them. It's totally dependent upon the rate at which we can flow those products through the value stream.
Got it. With that being said, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We'll be right back after this message.
Maximize customer value
and minimize waste.
The Lean Nation
on AM 790.
There it is, the theme song from The Apprentice, one of my favorite shows. What a great show that is. You know, you gotta love the Donald there, the way he brings these people. And it's great to be a Monday morning quarterback when you're watching everybody put together a plan.
Yes.
In a few, and these are people from not even the same organization. You know, these are people from a diverse group of backgrounds, you know, knowledge bases, skill levels. And they got to put together business plans basically every week, little micro business plans.
Yeah, but not only a week. They have to do stuff in like 24 hours.
Oh, it's like nuts. It's like nuts. And you know, at least in lean culture organizations, you start learning how to treat everybody else with respect and listen, and how to work around, you know, the jokesters. There's a jokester guy that's going to get hammered this week, I think, on the show. But you know, enough of that, because we're trying to just, you know, I'm talking with David Paino. He's with BMA Inc., Brian Maskell and Associates. They're lean accounting people. And we were talking about break, about, you know, this product that somebody wanted to buy from us. It was $100. We thought, gave them a good price. We looked at the bill of material. Now, you know, they went out and shopped it, of course. And now they get it for $20 less. Now it's at $80. And we're trying to look at the value stream. And I'm telling David, well, how do I make some decisions on this? Because you got to look whether you want the business, right?
Yeah.
Does it add more cost along the value stream? It's not going to add more cost along the value stream. It's a couple hundred units a year. It's not big numbers, so it's not going to blow us out of proportion. And now I just got to look at what the cost of purchase of those hard materials, and then figure out gross profit margin and take a look at what do we want to play for strategy and what do we need for dollars. And it's a competitor. We want to crush all our competitors.
Right.
We want to crush them.
And you know, really, we want to simplify these decisions and make them much more accurate too. I mean, because we see so many companies are getting they're devastated by standard costing decisions because they turn away a lot of business, and it's really not
and business that may not come back.
Yeah, business
I mean,
that may not come back, and that they
stuff.
Have the capacity to do. Like they would, so we have to look at those decisions as if we do this, is it going to make us more profitable?
Right.
Not based upon some kind of standard cost that doesn't really reflect what's happening. If you with lean improvements, you're going to create capacity. I mean that's the thing with lean companies is that it is a growth strategy. So you have to be thinking that. So when the improvements you make with lean are going to be realized when you take advantage of the capacity you create. Financially.
That's what you want to write on this thing that we're working on.
Yes, I mean that's
one of our footnotes, because traditional companies, you know, as they add incremental business, they look at adding people, adding capital equipment, adding resources. Lean companies don't look at it that way. They look at how do we fold this into this recipe we have going, and they only add them when it's really necessary, and then they're making smart business moves that you really need to do it now. You can't avoid it.
Yeah, it's based upon your capacity because these companies – I always think it's interesting that the traditional kind of management style of traditional companies would be that they look at their labor as variable, but it's really not variable at all. I mean, your labor is kind of fixed week after week. You may be in a company where you have a lot more temporary employees or something like that, and maybe that's
why
the
didn't
case,
even come up with that? I remember that in accounting classes at undergraduate school, that you accounted for labor as variable.
Yeah,
but if you have a payroll week to week and it's the same number,
yeah, you're not,
what is a variable?
You're not sending people away week over, you know, because your demand went up or down this week or last week. Really, you know, that just we don't have that kind of luxury most of the time in most of our companies. You know, so a lot of companies look at it as variable, but it's actually fixed. And when we have people that are driving continuous improvement and reducing waste and the time that they spend doing waste, then that creates this available capacity. And then we got to knock on the salespeople door and say, we want to go out and increase sales. So, right now, actually, this came up today with the Harvard group is that they were talking about people who make decisions to ship stuff overseas and to get stuff built overseas. Standard cost has been a main culprit in that. And many companies, they're looking at this as like this lowest standard cost of these units, and they're not factoring in all of the other things that change, like their lead time, their quality, the amount of inventory they have to carry, their on-time shipment, you know, whether or not.
Forget about all the little hidden stuff.
Yes.
Those are the fine print things.
Yep.
But tell people how they can find you, because we're going to post you on Facebook.
Okay. Well, they can go to our website, www.maskell, M-A-S-K-E-L-L, maskell.com. We also have a BMA Europe, so that's our BMAEurope.com site. You can find us on the web. There's a lot of resources there. We also have a lean accounting super group that's out there you could join, where we have a lot of good discussion on many different topics.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
So I'll have all that on Facebook, and we'll let you know this top secret thing that David's working on, because it's going to be pretty cool. And that's it for the Lean Nation today. We're over and out.
Maximize customers' satisfaction and minimize waste. It's a new way of doing business. The Lean Nation, weekday afternoons at 4 on your station for talk and business, AM 790.